Very good.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And we have a special guest. It's a husband and wife writing team. And their names are Nikki Girard and Sean French. And they've written a book. It's in the first of a series. It's called Blue Monday. And it's just out from Viking in the United States. I don't know who's publishing it in England. We shall ask them. Hello and welcome.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Hello, very nice to be here. Thank you.
This is great. It's great to have you on the show. It's been years. I know I interviewed you a number of years ago. Okay. I don't even know how many years it's been.
But we've been doing this for too many years.
you guys really have been very successful in the writing business. I mean, how many books have you written now? What number is this?
I think Nikki's keeping count.
Okay, I'll tell you. We have written 14 books together.
That's amazing. 14.
It's quite a lot. It makes me feel tired thinking about it.
I think I probably interviewed you for the first one. Or
so like 16 years ago or something.
Now, Blue Monday, this is, and I love this cover. I'm looking at the United States cover. I don't know what the England cover
is. Similar.
It's almost identical.
Really? That's unusual. Usually the British covers are more colorful.
I know, but in this case, they really like the English image and just took it pretty much.
Now this is the first Frida Kline novel. Now Frida Kline is one of the most interesting characters I read books in a long time. I mean, I really like
her. That's good.
She's a difficult and complicated woman, you know.
Very difficult, and I don't know if she's really happy, and I worry about her.
Can I say I don't think she is really happy, and I think you should worry about her. And in fact, you can go on worrying about her through the next 7 books, really.
Right now,
I mean, she's kind of she's grumpy and solitary and spiky and damaged and honourable and like a little ticking bomb through the books, I think.
Yeah, I was reading there's a little review in the Publishers Weekly, and they were talking about how she is and how interesting she is, and that how that makes the books even more. And the fact that she's a shrink, really. But what's the official term for her?
She's a psychotherapist.
Psychotherapist, sorry.
Yeah.
Psychotherapist.
She's drawn to Pete. I mean, in a way, one of the points about that really interested us about her is she's sort of really drawn to Pete she's got an instinct for getting at people's secrets, as a therapist. And in a way, that almost by totally against her will draws her into the kind of solving of a crime.
Now, the first thing, the first burning question I have is, why 8 books when there's only 7 days of the week?
That's such a good question. Sean, you can...
Well, we had this feeling, because in a way, because each title would be a day of the week, it seemed too simple just to have 7 books. So in a way, we're going to have the 7 days of the week, and then the 8th book is going to be slightly different, and it'll relate in a slightly different way.
And what I would say about that is that we wanted to have a fair number of books because we wanted to cover, like, almost a decade in Frida's life and the life of the characters around her.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, part of the reason it's called after days of the week because we want to kind of think about time passing and, how she's kind of marked by all the experiences she goes through. But you're right about the 8th day. We haven't quite worked out what the eighth day is going to be, a whole new day.
Right. From the way you were talking, Sean, it sounded like you had the whole thing planned out already and that you know exactly what each book...
We have a sort of vague sense of art. We sort of plan the journey to a certain extent, but in a way, if we knew everything, there'd be almost no point in writing it.
Right.
Lots of the time, you discover the books you rediscover them as you write them.
No, I want to tell.
I think one of the things is that. Oh, sorry, go on.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, say what you were going to say.
Sorry. What I was going to say was that what we have kind of planned out in a way that we can kind of work with is that there's an overarching story that joins all 8 books together. And that's what we've got worked out. So this is kind of there's this big novel, big mystery. And then there are 8 kind of standalone mysteries contained within it.
Right.
And we definitely haven't worked all of those out.
Well, this one, Blue Monday, I'm still thinking about this book because it really leaves you with a sense of Wow, why didn't I see that?
That's so nice to hear.
And there's two whammies at the end, if you know what I mean. But you actually know what I mean. But there's two really big surprises.
I know what you mean.
Trying to avoid giving it away. But
right.
I suppose one of the things we can say is we really wanted to try and combine to say that we didn't just want to bolt a psychotherapist onto a crime story. We really want to have a crime story.
Hello.
That wasn't me.
Oh, okay. Something happened there.
Sorry.
We're doomed.
Well, we're still there.
No, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Say what you were going to say again.
Yeah. We really wanted we didn't just want to bolt the psychotherapy thing onto a crime story. We want the crime story to come out of the kind of strange psychological world that Frieda knows so well, really. And so we really wanted to have a sort of mystery that was actually. You know, made sense. You felt that only a therapist could actually be properly equipped to deal with this problem.
She's, and it's interesting.
And we just wanted the people to kind of just really be surprised. So we hope we manage that.
Right. Well, I want to apologize to our listeners here if you lost a little. Something happened there, and we're back on here with Nikki and Sean again. But I wanted to say something about the fact that Frieda Klein is a very damaged character, and you don't see them most often when you see psychiatrists in books. They're very sure of themselves. They're kind of cocky. They kind of know it all, and they kind of analyze everybody they meet. Now, that she's not really. I mean, she's a bit arrogant, but she's definitely not a happy person. Definitely not in a good place.
Well, I think one of the things that has often interested us in our books, all the ones we've written, in a way, is there something about that I think people can identify with? Is that we're in a weird way we fear things, but we're also drawn to the things we fear. And I think the thing about Frieda is one of the things I think that maybe we'll discover this as the books progress, but she's sort of drawn to. She's drawn to the idea of being a doctor of the mind, because she's aware of the kind of what's in her own kind of secrets, and her own the kind of depths and strangenesses of her own psyche.
What's interesting about this book, Blue Monday, and I don't remember. It's been a number of years since when we did the interview last time. I don't remember if that book was like this too, but. Sometimes I have to read your passages twice to really get the meaning. Sometimes there's a hidden, what I call
a
hidden...
Is that good or a bad thing?
is that intentional?
Well, one thing is, I don't know about, we hope that our sentences make sense, but one thing, I think there is sometimes you feel, we're very passionate readers of thrillers, and some we love and some we have problems with, and we one of the things we always are really clear is, sometimes with a thriller, you read it, and then you get to the end, and that's it, and you'd never want to see it again, and we do feel that we want to, one of the things we talk about with our stories is we really would like people to think, well, what if they read it again? That you'd still get something out of it. It doesn't depend entirely on just discovering who did it. It's more, we want to have certain kinds of layers that will kind of repay proper attention.
I mean, and layers is the right word for it, because I think, thrillers are about what lies beneath, what lies underneath the surface. And in a way, that's how we're trying to write as well, so gradually kind of going deeper and deeper, both into a plot, but also into people's minds. I mean, one of the things about Frieda as a kind of central character is that she is kind of compelled by the oddness, the mystery of humanity, if you like. She doesn't think it's possible for anyone to be normal. No one is normal. And no mystery will ever entirely be... You'll never entirely solve...
She's kind of a snoop, too.
...to be human.
She's kind of a snoop.
Well, of course, she's... I mean, the thing about her is she's got... I mean, part of her, she has this great... It's a greater quality, and maybe almost her curse as well, that she's just got this instinct for people's secrets and for what people don't want to reveal, and in a way that's kind of a burden, because I think a lot of us get by in our lives by not finding out people's secrets. We let people, we kind of exist a bit on the surface, and Frieda's incapable of doing that.
She's got a sixth sense for other people's secrets. and she's fantastically good at guarding her own. Right. In a way, that's what we want to do. And through the octet, we want to make her like one of the mysteries that the reader has to find out about gradually.
Yeah, one of the horrible things about doing interviews is I can't reveal things in the books that I'd love to talk about.
You know, you can't, you mustn't.
And I almost did. I almost opened my mouth just then to ask it, and you know what I want to ask, but you probably can guess what I wanted to ask. But you know,
I can have a, I could guess, yes.
But I mean, are you guys being sadistic here by doing this to me? by throwing down these teasers in the first book, or is there going to be some kind of resolution with what I'm talking about?
Yeah, well, in a way, one of the challenges, it's a new challenge, because up to now we've only done books that are completely standalone, you know, than separate.
Right, so why the series now?
Partly because we thought of Frieda, as soon as we thought of her as a character, and that she is this kind of complicated woman with her own secrets and her own kind of, hidden past, in a way. And so we really thought, we don't want to just round her off in one book. She's someone who we want to follow and to, you know, both see what happens to her over the years, and
right.
Also there's a lot to learn about her, what made her the way she is.
But also, you know, in answer to when you said, will there be some kind of resolution to this thing that you can't mention?
Right.
the answer is yes. In the end, yes.
Well, you really, if you didn't have some kind of resolution, you'd have a lot of angry readers, I think. And people will know.
I know, exactly. I think it would be a bit of a con trick.
Your mail would suddenly triple or quadruple. And, you know, but it's something that, you know, it makes me cry when I read it. And I think, well, is there going to be something? Yeah, well, anyway, I can dance all around it, but I'm not going to give anything away. And I want people to read this book.
What I can say, in this book, what we wanted to try and have a sort of balance between that there's definitely a resolution, and that people get that the kind of the story rounds off, and yet there's things that will develop, and because which fits also with something that Nikki and I have always felt that. You know, in a way, especially I think the modern readers of thrillers really accept is that it's not like an old Agatha Christie thing. Mysteries don't just get solved and come to an end. They're always, you know, life isn't that simple. You know, you can, even when you find out who a murderer was, you've still got, you know, there are still things that will be unresolved, you know.
And you look at the very first sentence. I'm sorry.
Sorry?
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say that what we wanted to do. We definitely wanted a mystery to be resolved with complete satisfaction, and yet a kind of fuse is lit that will lead through to the book.
Right. You'd read the first sentence of the book. In this city, there were many ghosts, and that this is the 1987 beginning. And you know, what a great beginning to a book to have that. Have you say that? And I mean, it starts out with a young girl suddenly disappearing. I mean, very traumatic, very very traumatic.
Yeah.
All you can wonder is how in the world could you live the rest of your life knowing your daughter has disappeared and has never.
Well, exactly.
And this is something, of course, it is a terrible thing, which people do have to live with, and it's a sort of, in a way, there's something terribly, it's just such a haunting idea that, you know, you wanted to kind of explore it from all the different points of view.
I think it's the most intolerably painful thing for a parent. It's probably worse even than a child dying. It's just not knowing, never knowing. And then, you know, that opening sentence about the city being full of ghosts, you know, we feel that cities are haunted by their past, but also in this book we have the very specific book, ghosts as well, that kind of haunt the novel.
Right. Now, the three people this is dedicated to, are they your children? Or, sorry, it's four people. Edgar, Anna.
They are our children. They are our children.
I was really worried when you said three people. I thought, have we left one of them out?
No, I just can't count. That's the problem.
There'd be a real family problem if we did that.
But these are all your children?
You know, they are our children. And it's interesting you mention that because, you know, there are many reasons that we've written the first of an octet. And one of them is that our children, as we wrote Blue Monday, you know, our children have kind of left home or are in the process of leaving home. So this is our new kind of adventure, if you like.
Right. Now, how old is Frieda in the beginning of this book? Do we know?
We don't exactly know, but we know she's in her mid to late 30s.
Now, is that in 1987 or...
Nearly a decade.
Right.
Sorry?
Is that...
So that nearly a decade will elapse through the doctor. So that's a kind of dangerous decade in a woman's life, really.
Right. Now, is that in 1987 she's that age, or is she that age later on in the book?
No, she's that age later on in the book. We don't meet... There's a section of the book set in 1987, which is almost like a precursor to the main book. And the main book is set in 2009 and tips into 2010. And at that point, she's in her mid to late 30s. So, I would say like 37.
Okay, I'm just curious. You don't always see in the book how old a person is. Sometimes they'll mention it and I'll forget, you know, and I didn't know whether that was mentioned in the book.
Absolutely right, yes.
So why do you guys like to write such disturbing books? I mean, I love to read them, but why do you like to write them? I want to know why.
It's interesting that the attraction both people have for writing thrillers and for reading them. And there's something about, for us at least, I think that thrillers have been a way of safely exploring the worst fears there are. And with us, we do, of doing it together, if you like, exploring our joint obsessions and fears and kind of steering a path through them, if you like.
You mean we can actually tell what you guys are afraid of by reading your books?
You can. Certainly our books, we don't just think of, this is going to work as a story. We think of, what are things that really get under our skin? What are things that we find really chilling? So, you could say that just the beginning of Blue Monday, we think as parents, the idea of a child, just what you were saying, the idea of a child going missing and just never coming back, and the investigation gradually. The search gradually fading away. What a terrible thing to have to live through. So that's one of the, which is one of the starting points from the book.
And actually, now that I think about it, there's a third unresolved thing at the end, which I'd forgotten about. which kind of does get resolved, but kind of doesn't. So I'm wondering where that's going too.
Well, one of the points, of course, when that there are certain kinds of crime where even when people can imagine for themselves, there are certain crimes. Even if you find out what happened, it's still not going to. It won't ever be all right. Or it can never just be completely made simple.
It's interesting it's interesting how well you guys write characters. I mean, characters, to me, are the most important part of a book. I mean, if they're not real, then the book isn't going to come across as real. But you, Frieda's a very real character, and I love the workman that comes to work at the house. I mean, he's kind of the comic relief.
One of the things that's going to be interesting, we almost feel we've been living with Frieda now for several years, and we talk about her, and she's become like almost a member of our family, and the same with the group of people around her, and which is part of the attraction, I think, of writing a series, is we're going to show. Frieda and a group of different people, people in the police, friends of hers, we're going to follow them for years and see how they change and develop and interact, so that's just a further thing we find an exciting prospect.
So in this series we're going to see everybody that's in this book is probably going to be in the next book? Basically?
Still alive.
Yeah.
You will meet them again.
Right, which is kind of thrilling to think that they're going to come back. They're like old friends already, even after just reading Blue Monday.
Something about that. I mean, I think we're going to, as Nikki said before, if we're writing about a book a year, and you'll see these people, things change over years. As one gets older, things just happen, and things,
that's
one of the things we'll be exploring.
Any way you guys can speed it up and bring out Tuesday pretty quickly? Because I can't wait to read it.
we're always kidding ourselves as it is, I'm afraid.
Oh, really? It's that bad? I mean, paint a picture for us. Do you guys ever fight while you're writing?
Only in the most kind of productive way. I mean, the thing is, we're married people, and it's all, things are always complicated, and negotiating. And
so what he means is, yes, of course we do. Yes, we fight while we're writing, and I think more the fighting isn't about kind of huge things about, how dare you change my words. It's more about, like, marital bickering that spills over into the process. Whose turn is it to wash up? But so of course we do.
But it's interesting because
fighting is very important.
Right. What's interesting is I can't tell which of you wrote which chapter. Now, is it true you write alternate chapters?
It's true. It's true that we more or less do, but it's not so true that if you came to look at it and worked out one, then you could follow it through. And also, you know, what's really important is that, you know, if I write a chapter and give it to Sean, and he will then change it and add to it and kind of make it Nicky French rather than, you know, it's also I'm writing as Nicky French and Sean is writing as Nicky French. We're not writing as separate individuals and mashing the kind of the voices together. We're both trying to write as Nicky French. We pass the chapters between each other and edit each other and erase each other and add to each other. And I think I'm really glad if you say that you can't tell who wrote which bit, because I don't think it is possible to tell.
Now, it's funny because I was listening to a writer talk about when she wrote a book with a friend of hers, and they had a fan write in saying that they loved the male part of the writing, and they said, but you really must be a bitch. it makes me wonder, you know, is there something in your chapters, Nikki, that I would be able to say, oh, well, she wrote that chapter because it's feminine, it's more feminine based.
I don't believe that. Anybody can tell.
And also, I think the point is that when we write, you know, really is a thing that when we write together, it's not that, you know, we really write some, I mean, when we write separately, we're very different writers, but when we write as Nicky French, we write in this very particular, we write in a different sort of way, which, you know, but we write in the same way. So even, I think, you know, even people who know us very well, like relations sometimes try and think they can, oh, that must be Nicky because that bit happened to Nicky, you know. But it's not, it really isn't like that at all, I don't think.
Well, it's interesting.
Sorry, there are times when I pick up an old book of ours, I'll read, I can't tell who wrote what.
Right. This book's going to haunt a lot of people. And when you read this book, if you haven't read it yet, and I'm sure you all want to read it now. Oh, look, you got a blurb from Camilla Lackberg. She's one of my favorites. I didn't realize that. That was on the back there. But, I mean, it's going to haunt you for a little bit. I mean, I found myself staring at this book on my table thinking, wow.
I'm really glad, you know, I'm very glad you say that, because we don't want it just to be like a sort of doing a crossword puzzle or something and, you know, wondering
right.
who did it. It's a real, you know, because as we wrote the book, it goes into areas that really haunted us, you know, so we wanted to sort of, you know, people to leave in certain ways people really, you know, challenged by it.
I don't know if I can bring up
haunted, yeah.
Somebody had said that there were little parts of the book with what they call child endangerment parts, you know, where you're describing what's happening to this child. And I don't want to give away too much, but were those difficult to write?
They're difficult to imagine, I think, because, you know, being parents ourselves, and of course it is, you know, what a parent most fears for their child. Their child is snatched and in danger and they can't help them. It was very important. It was felt very important to do it kind of delicately, so it wasn't manipulative of the reader and kind of using this innocent child. So in a way, one of the things we decided to do when we were thinking through the child section is to make the child kind of confused about what was happening to them. So it became a bit like a fairy story. We wrote it a bit like a fairy story.
Hmm.
It kind of threaded its way through the book.
It's all planned. I'm fascinated by how you plan all this out. I mean, when you sit and you start to write a book and you don't have any words, I mean, where do you start?
I think that's the terrifying thing about writing. It's like standing on the edge of an abyss. You're starting with nothing and silence, and you're making something out of nothing. I can so understand why writers get blocked, that kind of fear of just silence. And starting is the hardest, but maybe it becomes easier when there are two of us, because, you know, we spend a long time planning it out and knowing what book it is that's in both of our heads. And then at some point you just have to kind of jump off the diving board, really.
Right, exactly. And I always admire writers when I think of that, how difficult it really is. And they just had a movie out with Charlize Theron where you actually feel the way she feels when she's trying to write a book, you know, where do I begin? And, you know, she's writing this young adult novel, and it's fascinating because she's a very damaged character, too. So, But she's at the typewriter and she writes the first couple sentences, and then suddenly realizes, oh, that sounds like garbage, I'm going to toss it out and start over again.
Well, that's in a way, there's always a reason, there's always an excuse not to write, and in a way you've got to, and so one of the things of writing fiction is you've got to be a mixture of being very self-critical, because you've got to make it as good as you can, but not being so self-critical that you stop you writing, you think, well, there's no point in writing it. So you've got to have this mixture of almost a kind of arrogance and or confidence, at least, in your idea and hold, you know, and stay loyal to the idea that you got that made you want to write the book, but also while being critical and constantly, you know, trying to make it better and change it.
Now, faith and doubt.
For somebody who's just getting into this series, well, is every book, can you figure out the ending of every book if you really study what you've written? Like with Blue Monday, can somebody really figure it out?
That's such a good question. I think what we don't want ever to do is cheat.
Yeah.
So we're not withholding information
right. And
then springing it on the reader. So if you look back, I think you can, and I really hope we do this throughout, if you look back, you can see everything is there. There will be a trail laid through each novel.
Yeah. So you will see, yes, I think that's right. If a reader read the book again, because I think sometimes you'll see a thriller on TV or a film or read a book, and you suddenly think, you know, they withheld something, and or they cheated or in some way, you know. And we really feel if you read the book again, you'll think we did not cheat, and you'll be able to see, and you know, you'll be see what's coming.
Now, would you say you guys are addicted to writing?
That's a good question, Nikki.
Sure, okay. I'd say, my addicted to writing, yes. Do you know, I would say that I'm addicted to writing, and I wouldn't know what to do with myself if I didn't write, but more than that, I almost wouldn't know who I was if I didn't write. That writing is the way I kind of find out what I think about things, and if there are days go by when I don't write, I feel kind of itchy and stale and wrong, as if I haven't exercised properly for weeks or something.
Well, I'd say that also, that I think part of the way that Nikki and I look at the world is just, there's a bit of our brain, which, you know, every time, if we meet someone, or every time something weird happens, or we come across something interesting, you think, now, can we use that? Would that be a story, you know, or that, you know, some interesting character, you know, could you take a bit of that and put, you know, could we use that in a story? And there is a way, it would feel terrible, but, you know, there's a kind of addiction. I think if you couldn't, if you think, well, what's the point of having interesting experiences if you can't turn them into a story? Now, that's, you know, some people think that's rather sad, but it's a kind of compulsion.
But on the other hand, addiction is both kind of wonderfully pleasurable and then terrifying sometimes, so that, you know, when writing is going well, it's the best feeling in the world, I think, and when it's going badly, it can be very kind of grim, and it's like kind of falling into a hole inside yourself, really.
So what kind of research do you do for Frida? I mean, is there somebody you go to and you say, well, you know, do you know a friend who...
Well, we do. You know, one or the other of us have at some point had bits of therapy. B, we've read dozens and dozens and dozens of books about and by kind of psychotherapists. And then also we have friends who are therapists, and who kind of kindly helped us and read through what we've written and things. So we really try. I mean, it's not so important that we're completely accurate, but it's very important that it feels accurate, however much anyone knows about the world of therapy.
Right, exactly.
It really applies to the, like, with every, I mean, anything we write about in our books, we always make sure we know what we need to know, you know, so that we know the procedure, the police procedures or whatever, or forensic details, that, you know, we get them right. Because I think there's a terrible, I think readers feel that you're just, you know, you're making it up or you don't really know it, then they lose the faith in the world you're creating.
Now, it's interesting because, you know, you can't make it like Jessica Fletcher. Wherever she went, there was a murder. It just seems so fantastical. Like, how much? I don't even want to be around this woman because somebody's going to die, and it might be me.
Yeah, that's right.
But in a way, you can do it once. So in a way, you know, Frida at the beginning, she's got no connection at all. But, you know, of course, the process of Blue Monday is she gets very much implicated with the police, and she, you know, and so that has a...
Well, how ironic that she's really... she's really kind of a loner. When you get right down to it, she's a loner in a certain way.
Yeah,
she is a loner.
She's a loner who kind of can't ever seem to be alone. So she keeps being dragged into relationships or dragged into things. So in a way, one of the issues is this. One of the things that drew us to the idea of Frieda was really Frieda is someone who what she wants is to be, you know, safe in her house and solving people's problems just by solving what's inside their heads, and she's actually. You know, what circumstances force her out into the messy, horrible, violent world?
I mean, the world actually, you know, it keeps crashing in through her armor. I mean, sometimes literally crashing in.
Right. And you think of, we all, you know, we think of people that are alone, we always think, well, they must be so lonely. But some people just enjoy being. I know my mom, toward the end of her life, the last 20 so years, loved being alone. She didn't mind it at all.
Yeah.
She could stay by herself all the time and be perfectly happy. And then there wasn't anything.
I think there are people who are lonely and then there are people who are solitary. And Frieda is solitary rather than lonely.
So she has a kind of self-sufficiency, but in fact, in a way, it's a kind of self-sufficiency that does draw people to her in a way.
I think that it seems like she really likes her job, but in a way, sometimes it feels to me like it's a drudgery to her, too. So it's kind of got that mix of both.
Well, you know, because in a way, that's what most people's work is like, isn't it? You know, and you kind of... You know, almost nobody does work that is just pleasurable all the time. Everybody has to kind of cope with difficulty. And
if they do, I want that job.
Yeah.
I definitely want that job. Actually, interviewing authors is a lot of fun. I get a lot out of doing this. Which is why I do it.
Well, it's a wonderful thing you're doing.
It is, but because you never know what the author's going to say, and that makes it even more fun. And
yeah.
You know,
I used to. Because I must say, I have the same thing. I'm just always terribly curious about the lives of authors, you know, and all the stuff about, you know, how do they write and where do they write and all that sort of thing. I just find that irresistible.
And it's interesting. It's also interesting where authors can write. I mean, some say, oh, I never write on the road. I could never write on the road at all. It's just I couldn't do it. Or even a hotel room. A lot of them will say, I can't even write in the hotel room. I have to be home to write at my house. You know,
well, Nikki and I both worked before we wrote books. We both worked as journalists, and I think you really, in a way, one of the benefits of having time as a journalist is you really don't have that luxury. You know, there are times where you just have to write something, and it has to be, you know, it has to be done quickly. So wherever you happen to be, you just need to be able to write.
I would go further than that. Actually, I think the place I find it hardest to write is a place where it's supposed to be perfect to write. I mean, I would hate. To go to a writer's retreat and sit in a room and have people put food outside my door and be there for 8 hours tapping away. I think I would just cease being able to write entirely. I love writing in the middle of the kind of mess of life, if you like. I love writing and going down and cooking something and making lots of cups of tea and children crawling in under the floor. They're too old to do that now. But that kind of whole thing about writing amid life, I that's what I like.
What annoys me sometimes...
I like writing on the road. I like writing on trains. I like being in strange places to write.
What really annoys me sometimes, and I think Gwyneth Paltrow is going through this right now. The people are accusing her of ghostwriting her books, you know. And in my eyes, if you put your name in your book, I want you to have written the book. And I feel very strongly about that. Now, I'm not saying I don't know whether Gwyneth Paltrow really wrote her cookbook or not. I don't. But, you know, when I see somebody's name in the book, I immediately think
people, for example, does it matter that Keith Richards didn't write his own autobiography? You know,
he didn't? Well, so I guess to some people it does. I guess, but when you go into, when you buy the book, you think, well, Keith wrote this book, and that's why I want to buy it. That's part of the reason I want to buy it. So maybe that.
You know, I think that's right, because I think what you do is you listen to a voice in the book, don't you? That's what people respond to, is a voice. I mean, that's why it was very important for us to kind of have the voice of Nikki French and just have the name of Nikki French on it. You know, and I think people kind of trust you, can hear a voice. So when you kind of discover that you know that it's not Keith Richards or that it's not Gwyneth Paltrow, or, you know, if it's not, then it feels like a bit like a betrayal sometimes.
Do you guys have any regrets in your careers at all?
Oh, I'm going to turn that round, first of all. I mean, one of the things that I feel infinitely grateful for, I mean, you know, to be able to write, and, you know, I used to, for many years I was a journalist, but now I'm just a writer. And to be able to write and earn a living from writing is completely the luckiest thing in the world. And also, that for a lot of the years that my children were all at home, I could be there, you know, so I could write around their needs. And those two things, it's just been, that's an extraordinary thing. So regrets dwindle in the face of that. I have many regrets, but not so many about the writing bit.
And nobody cares, about your ages either. You could write, you could be 150 and still write. And nobody would even know.
That's exactly right. And we can, you know, there's this extraordinary freedom about writing, which is also what's terrifying about it. But that kind of, the freedom to kind of be who you want, to say what you want, and to kind of look how you look, and to live the way you want to live, that's extraordinary.
Now, what happens if you're in the mood to write, Nikki, and Sean is not? Then what do you do? Do you write and he doesn't? Is that the way, or do you have to both be in the mood to write?
No, because we do it alternately. So, you know, I'll write something in part. So it's rather lucky, actually. So if I'm in the mood to write and Sean isn't, I can write, and then Sean doesn't need to, and then he can still be working while he's not writing, and vice versa. You know, so I can be feeling kind of blocked or constrained, and Sean can write. On the other hand, if one of us was not in the mood to write for the whole book, that would be no good, because it couldn't just be what, you know, we have to share it out between us.
Right, exactly. That makes sense. But I always thought, you know, there are just some days, I would guess there's some days you just can't, you just are not in the mood to write.
Of course, you know, there are some times where it just is where the words are not coming, or the mood is wrong or something, you know. And you need, in a way, you need, sometimes it's best just to recognize that to go and do something else, you know, go and do your washing or something, rather than just you know, try and struggle.
I think it's just... Writing is all about failing to write a lot of the time. A lot of the time, writing is about not writing, or writing the wrong word and having to erase them, or writing kind of whole books, which we have done together, and then not quite working. And those are kind of foundations for the time when you can write. So all those times of struggling and not writing and kind of bumping up against knots, I think they can just, they're important. They're part of the whole process, really. Because it is true, there are days that you can write and write and write and nothing happens, and you've got fewer words at the end of the day than you did at the beginning.
It's interesting. I listened to an actor the other day talking about how on a TV show, at the very beginning, he was just learning things. And he said he can't even go back and watch the old shows because he sees the struggle as he was going through as he's watching the series evolve. Of course, he masters it more and more, and you can see, you sense it. But do you feel that the same way as writers? Do you feel like your first book was a little... I mean, can you tell the difference between the first book and the 14th? I mean, is there...
Do you know, well, I'm going to leap out. Do you know, I would feel that more if I went and looked back at when I started as a journalist. You know, in a way, we were quite old writers when we started writing our books together. So, if I look back at my early things I wrote, which I have in scrapbooks and are pretty painful to look at now, or even I wrote some books on my own, and before that, and maybe that was my sort of learning thing. We've changed and the books are different, but I don't feel that with our...
I don't either, which is not to be complacent, or to actually, this will sound very complacent. Sometimes I look back at books we did earlier and I think, ooh, that's better than I remember. It sounds terrible. But, you know, but it is true, there's certain things I've written on my own. Maybe we're good at kind of protecting each other from terrible mistakes. Maybe that's one of the advantages of writing together. There's some things I've written back on my own which I look at and it makes me wince. I kind of can't, it's like kind of looking at my old diaries or something. You know, and I can see how I just couldn't find the right voice or hit the right note.
Well, can I say, I'm going to say that's Nikki's being, that's not true about...
No, it's
true. Of course it's true. One of the things is when you look at an old book, the interesting thing about looking at one, you know, our old books, you know, which, I mean, our first book was published in 97, so which is an incredibly long time ago. And in a way, I have to say, I don't sit of an evening reading our old books, but sometimes you'll pick it up and, you know, read a few pages.
Right.
And it's interesting because it just feels it's written by by different people, you know. And that, so in a way, there's a kind of detachment you feel about it, you know, that they're, you know, so it's just... So that's why you could never... It would be insane to go and revise it and write it the way we do it now, because it's, you know...
That's really interesting, because I think that even about the books that we write now, you know, so the book that we're writing at the moment, it is a bit like this part of yourself that's mysterious to yourself is writing it. So it's always, in a way, being written a bit by a stranger, because you're always... You know, I think the wonderful thing about writing is that it can surprise you. And, you know, so you write things you hadn't known, not just that you hadn't known you were going to write, but you hadn't known you thought or imagined. And so this bit of you that you don't, that's slightly kind of out of reach and kind of mysterious, so it's always like magic. You're in touch with this bit of you that you don't know about. Which is why it's so good having a psychoanalyst, because that's a bit like being an analyst, isn't it?
Right.
Tapping into those unconscious bits.
So a psychoanalyst could have a field day with you guys.
Oh, certainly.
I think they could have. I mean, if we all look at ourselves really truthfully, I think we all, Manny, could use some psychoanalysis. I mean, I know I could.
You're talking to the right people about this, because we've spent so much time, you know, we've been so obsessed, you know, with the character of Frieda. We actually spend our time, almost every time, you know, you want to be careful about talking to us, because every time we meet someone, we think, God, Frieda would have a field day talking to them, you know, you do have a sense that almost everyone, as you said, that almost everyone could do with some therapy. Part of this is a way of looking at your life and thinking of its meaning and, what are the bad patterns you've got into that you could get out of, you know.
Right.
I think almost everyone could benefit from that.
I'm curious where your books are the most successful. What country? I mean, and how many countries they're published in?
They're published in, I don't exactly know the number, but rather a lot of countries.
More than 30 or
33 or so, I can't. But the country that kind of, in terms of per head of population, that they're most successful on, it's Holland. In Holland,
really?
Everyone buys Nicky Friendly books. And it's an odd thing, because, you don't quite... And it's very difficult to know why a book will appeal to one country more than another country or anything like that. And it's also not very useful trying to work it out. You know, you just want to write the books that you have to write and hope that you find readers who want to read them. And you shouldn't think too hard about how to be successful or what the kind of ingredients are.
And yes, it's also rather dangerous to think, what is it about, you know, this book that, or say, about your last book, what was it that people liked about it? Let's try and do that again in this book. You know, that's fatal, you know, because you've always got to go into, go beyond your kind of comfort zone, really, when you're writing.
And, writing is such there's so many books coming out. Even now, I'm amazed at the number of books that come out. Working at a bookstore, I see them. I see a lot of them, so I know. And you think to yourself, who would ever read something like that in some of these books?
I think it's enough to give any writer a writer's block, the number of books that get published. Also, the number of wonderful books that get published. And, they just flood into the marketplace, don't they?
Right. Well, what I like about your book is I never know right at the beginning where it's going. I never know what it's like being on a road and there's five different directions you can go on to. You never know where they're going to go through now.
Well, that's very nice to hear, because because in a way there's a kind of temptation, because I think sometimes maybe some readers want this is. You know, there's a kind of comforting thing about you pick up a book, a new book by an author you like, and you kind of, I know exactly what I'm going to get, and that's
right.
Very reassuring. But we always feel we want to try and do something, to really try and do something different, or something, to surprise the reader a bit, every time.
And to surprise us a bit.
So what will be different about Tuesday? I assume the next book's going to be called Something Tuesday.
It is.
How did I figure that one out?
Very devilishly clever.
there's a different, and Frieda gets involved because of her connection with the police.
Right.
And it's a different kind of crime, and also there are different. Well, actually, it's very. I'd say I think it's very different, but I'm not going to say any more at all.
I know, I'll say something more. I mean, I think, you know, it's both different and the same. You know, I think that one of the things we tried to do in Blue Monday, which we've also tried to do in Tuesday, although the plot is completely different and the characters have kind of been marked and changed and surprising things happen, but we wanted to kind of write a book that was both kind of authentically realistic and yet slightly uncanny and kind of almost, you know, with a kind of creepy gothic air to it. So we wanted to try and kind of thicken the book like that, so it had both those kinds of textures in it. And we've tried to do that again with Tuesday. So we wanted to be a kind of book that's kind of got quite a big canvas and is kind of vivid and dark.
Right. Now, how much research goes into a book before you do it? I mean, for Blue Monday, did you do a lot of research?
Well, a lot. We do. I mean, basically, it's just as much as it takes, you know, and certainly it depends. Sometimes we write about areas that we know about already, and so there might be a bit less, you know, but it's, you know, we just, you know, I mean, you know, it can be weeks, months, you know, and there's different kinds of, you know, it can mean actually going to places, and, you know, talking to particular people, doing certain kinds of reading, or, you know, just, it's a really important part of the books we write.
Right, now, what would we find you doing? Say we snuck into your house late at night. Not late at night, but at night after your...
How late at night?
No, not too late.
The kind of thing you'd find us doing, if you snuck into our house in the evening, is, you know, especially with our family here, we'd be sitting around the table, cooking or eating, and drinking wine, and sort of having very, very animated conversations with people shouting over each other, and that's, you know, I would say a lot of our life is sitting around the table, we're having, you know, just having some very passionate discussions.
Shouting and drinking, clearly. No, that's the evening. I mean, I think that thing of kind of cooking food with friends or family and eating it and solving the problems of the world, that's a good way to pass an evening.
Yeah, Frida likes the food, I can tell. She does like it. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, eating's a wonderful thing.
Frida isn't a very good cook. We love food, and we spend a lot of our time talking about what we're going to eat and then eating it.
exactly.
Well, you know, and that's kind of part of the meaning of life, really. Whereas I think Frida's not so good. She's not such a great cook. Other people have to cook for her, really.
Mm-hmm.
But food, do you know, I think food, I love food in novels. I love knowing what's inside people's fridges and on their plates. I think detail is very important like that.
And one other thing I wanted to mention about the book, it's funny how the authors are always in dark colors if it's a darker book. You know, this is kind of a dark book. I mean, there's a darkness about it, but we're not going to see you in yellow or orange, that's for sure. it would probably stand out too much.
But I don't wear much yellow or orange.
Actually, this is not true. I have made a resolution not to wear dark. I've made a resolution, and I do wear yellow and orange and red, and so there we are.
Well, we're going to see it on the book then. The next book, do you think?
No.
I hope so. I like to see. I like and that's the thing. I mean, I always feel better when I'm around bright colors. I don't know why that is. I've always had a knack for loving bright colors. The yellows and oranges and reds always make me happy.
You wear yellows and oranges and reds.
Yeah, I've got red on right now. I've got a red shirt on right now.
That's very good to hear.
Yes. An orange at the moment, really. An orange T-shirt. But, do you know, the thing is, well, I think some people might get the impression reading our books that we're incredibly bleak and grim and tortured people, which, you know, we are but, I mean, I think in a way, if there's something therapeutic, in a way, writing our books has something kind of therapeutic about it, because we can kind of go into these areas and really explore them, you know, and it's quite a good way. It's not kind of, to say you're getting it out of your system, it makes it sound too neat, but it's a way of, you know, you kind of deal with things in some ways by writing about them.
What would be the biggest, and finally, we're almost done, we're just about run out of time, unfortunately. I could talk to you guys all night, it's been fun. But what would be the biggest surprise we would find out about you? If you told us something that nobody knew, our listeners
about,
are,
about what? About ourselves? Or
yeah. What would surprise your readers the most to hear about you?
I think the biggest surprise a reader would have about me is that I can speak fluent Swedish.
Oh really?
My mother's Swedish. So if you want to switch over to Swedish for the rest of the conversation, we could really, you know. But
oh wow, that's interesting.
What's the biggest surprise about me? I can't think. Yeah, Sean's Swedish is very good. We go to Sweden every year and jump through the hole in the ice at New Year.
You guys really like each other. I mean, that comes through. I mean, you have to.
We like each other.
And why does that sound like I'm surprised? That's what you're thinking. You're thinking, why is he surprised about this? We've been married for so long.
Nicky's got lots of surprising things about.
Oh, really? I think, but we can't mention most of them, probably.
Nicky once interviewed Arnold Schwarzenegger. That would surprise people.
Oh, really? That must have been fun. I assume it was before the maid.
It was.
Had you only known.
I would have found out.
Yeah, exactly. You would have been read a lot more, I would think, if people had known that. Well, this has been a lot of fun. You guys are just great fun to talk to.
It's been so nice. I'm very glad we managed.
Lovely talking to you.
I'm trying to make you laugh, too, because I love to hear you guys laugh. You have a great laugh. It's very, very hearty and very... And my listeners love that, you know. At least that, you know, it's nice to have a sense of humor.
These crazy laughing Brits. Yeah.
But we must mention the book one more time. Blue Monday is out from Viking Press. What's the publisher in England?
It's Penguin.
It's Penguin in England.
Penguin Books. Yeah.
So you're with a number of different publishing companies.
Yeah, we're all got all different ones all over the world.
And all the there's e-books of it, and I'm sure there's an e-book of
all
this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you can get it in a variety. Almost any form that you want to read.
How about audio? Is there an audio version of?
I think there certainly is in England.
There is.
I guess. Yeah, in fact, you can get it as a download.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for doing the interview.
It's been great fun.
Thank you very much indeed.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.